Hello and welcome. This is Jessica Eyes with Purdue University's Department of Agricultural Economics, and we are here today hosting our second podcast, and my co-host, Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jessica. You're sporting a new look today.
I am. I got my hair cut.
Hey, for those of you out there in podcast land, Jessica's rocking the studio today. It looks
great. Yeah, that's right. Got a brand new haircut.
These things are kind of risky, though,
Jessica. I know. It's very short. It's actually shorter than Ken's hair now.
You're stepping out there, you know, and taking a little bit of risk, and that feeds into our podcast today. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, farmers and their income and how the government maybe steps in to protect them a little bit.
Indeed we are, and we have a guest with us today who's feeling a little shy, but that's okay. It's Dr. Roman Keeney. How are you, Roman?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Jessica.
Good. Thank you for joining us.
I'm excited to be here in the Craner building.
Hey, this is our informal studio, and we really are appreciative of you being here, Roman.
Thanks.
Look, tell us a little bit about this thing that people call the Farm Bill.
Okay, well, It's a big thing that has not a lot to do with farming in terms of the money that's spent.
So, why do they call it the Farm Bill?
Well, it is how farmers are going to get their payments, but
their payments for what?
Their payments for crops, for disaster and livestock. Dairy farmers get something we call margin protection. So as prices move against their costs, they get some of the margin made up. And so they get payments to farms, but 80% of the Farm Bill goes to families in need that meet a socioeconomic criterion for food assistance.
So it's like the SNAP program.
That's the SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
That's what we used to call food stamps.
School lunch programs, women and infant children program, WIC. Comes through the Farm Bill.
I wish we had a couple of days we could talk about how these two got put together.
Yeah, I was going to say, why are these two even tied together?
All right, let's talk about it.
I'm sorry, I had to bring it there. Like, is this just another case of the government kind of hodgepodging things together, or what?
It's really a political marriage that dates back 35, 40 years. It became more difficult to sell the idea that we were going to support farmers during very strong economic times. That I heard Chris's podcast last week talking about boom bust. Well, we were in a boom period, and to continue to underpin agriculture with government support, you needed to wed it to something else, and it turns out there was a poverty problem going on, and there was some idea that we had surplus food or foodstuffs back in those days, and that if we filter those back, you've heard of government cheese. Well, that's where this comes from. You filter it through, you support dairy products, you store those, and you've got to have an outlet for them. So you turn around and find the neediest families and give it to them. So they're all packaged together. The population is very urban. That means we have U.S. representatives with a vote in Congress that are urban-oriented. You've got to figure out a way to make them care about the farm program, so you tie it into their families in need in their district.
So it was a political move, essentially, to get the bill passed.
Yeah, you know, and there's concern that this won't continue. In fact, the House of Representatives last summer couldn't figure out a way to pass both the farm side of the programs and the nutrition side of the programs. Sorry, banging on the table. Couldn't find a way to pass both of those together, so they split it apart, and we actually have a congressman in Indiana who's one of he's at the tip of that spear of splitting these two apart, and you know, it's yet to be determined if that's the big idea that just hasn't made it, you know, whose time hasn't come, and that will be the way policy goes eventually, or if it's just a non-starter, kind of an out-there idea that never comes around to mainstream. But it passed out that way this summer, and then it had to be folded back together to get to a final compromise.
So let's talk about the farm side of the Farm Bill. What's new about the new farm legislation versus what we had just a few months ago?
Okay, a few months ago, we in 2013, right, the last crop year that we completed under the old program, farmers had direct payments, and these were notorious for giving you the same amount of money. The check was the same whether you had a good income year, which we've had several good income years in a row, or a bad income year. So this was not what we would call a counter-cyclical movement, right? It didn't move as the market moved. The logic behind that being, if you had an exceptionally strong year in income, the government goes ahead, they pass the check over to you, but you use it to self-insure against the idea that things could turn downward.
But you don't really know if they're going to use their money for that, though.
They use it however they want. It's an income supplement that could be used to insure later on. It could be used for an investment on the farm. It could be used to put it in the stock market.
But if I buy a boat with that money, that just means I've got other money over here that I didn't buy a boat with that I could use to support my farm next year if I have a bad year.
Really, is that what that logic means right there?
Well, that's how I would do it. I
mean, do you think it's a good idea to do it like that?
I there were lots of good reasons to do it that way. One, you're not... You know, these payments came about in 1996 following many years of the government trying to actually manage agricultural markets. Okay, so we have what we call supply control. And so rules would come out of Washington. This is how many acres you can grow of this. This is how many acres you can grow of soybeans this year. And you had those base acres. And so we needed a radical transformation, right, to get out of that idea that anybody in Washington could figure out a planning that would work and drive the market. So we got away from that with these direct payments. And the idea was to transition slowly out of giving government support to farmers altogether and move to crop insurance. It didn't work out that way because it turns out the thing that upsets people about direct payments isn't that you get extra income when income is already good. It's when income falls by a lot, the direct payment check is the same amount, and it wasn't covering enough costs. So we got into a period of having to supplement the direct payment with emergency legislation year after year after year. And so we started in about 2002 reforming the first reform with some counter-cyclical programs. So our new program now is dual counter-cyclical. It gives you an option. You can either choose to protect your revenue or just be protected on the price side. And as prices fall or revenue falls, your payments will eventually trigger. And if revenues or price keep falling, your payments will grow, right? So the idea is, just like I was talking about before, on margin. So you pick some benchmark level. Once you hit that, you start receiving a payment. As you get farther below that benchmark, the payments go up more.
How do you know what option is right for you, though?
Well, you first have to learn about the program, and we're still learning. And we're now 6 days into having rules about the program. So the program, the Farm Bill, the law passed February 7th. The president signed it into law. It took until September 25th, I believe, for the first set of rules about the program to actually come out. And so this is the law gets written, but it gets handed off to an executive department to actually go through and say, okay, this is what we read in the law, this is how we're actually going to implement it, and this is how people have to decide. So we're trying to learn. We're going to count on farmers to help us learn about some of this. I mean, they're the ones with all the idiosyncratic sort of cases that are going to come up, and one program's going to look better than the other. At the moment, a fairly consistent look at Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, and the crops we grow, and sort of the five-year period we're moving away from, indicates that the revenue program has a little stronger performance. It matches a lot of the crop insurance movement we've seen too. A lot of farms have moved. I made up a word. like a different podcast. Have moved over to revenue protection as their insurance choice, away from yield protection. And so that program will actually match that somewhat, and it's actually designed for that. And I just spent 2 hours with a colleague this morning saying, how did this politically come about? Well, the political reality is that the Midwest Senate, senators or representatives sort of wrote the revenue program for their farms. And that was going to be the only program because the Senate, the Agriculture Committee in the Senate, the chair is from Michigan and sort of had that orientation. Well, the southern crops, rice, cotton, those kind of things, peanuts, they have good lobbies too.
You mean goober peas?
Yeah. There's a song. You're going to sing the song?
Eating goober peas, eating goober peas. I'm not from the South, and I know that song.
Yeah. Okay.
Go on, please.
Okay. I'm not either. I know that song. It's good.
Have you ever had a goober pea?
Goodness, hell.
I lived in goober peas. Yeah. Yeah. I lived in Georgia for a while, so I know all about goober peas. They used to sell them boiled along the side of the road.
I know, they're kind of like mushy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, go on. Talking about Southern crops.
Southern crops.
You're talking about Southern crops. Southern, oh my gosh.
Southern crops and price support.
Got it. Okay, so the sort of person who has a positive outlook on government would say, oh, we have an option for farmers because they care, right, and they want them to be able to work. The realist would say, oh, the Southern sort of lobbies and legislators came in and said, this doesn't work for our producers. We need a second option in the farm bill. And so one of the things we were sort of discussing, Professor Gray and I, this morning was, do you go out and say, the first thing you tell a group of Indiana farmers, is it okay to go out and say, the ARC, this revenue program, was written for you. Now, whether they did a good job of writing it for you or not is really what we should be working around, because it was written with the crops you're growing in Indiana in mind. And, you know, we're trying to package some stuff we're going to go out and talk about later in the year, and we want to be clear in message that everybody needs to learn as much as they want to about the programs and think about what is unique about your farm. And sort of the situation, you know, what's the income situation? Where do you need protection? What are you comfortable with in terms of tolerating risk? And how aggressive do you want to be in trying to maximize payments versus just realizing that they're actually a pretty small part of the managerial sort of aspect of the farm? One of the things you can't emphasize enough is that what's going to determine success and failure in farming over the next few years, to me and anybody looking at farm programs, is how well you market in what looks like turbulent times on the price side, a lot of volatility, and sort of, you know, we spent a few years finding a new high price level for crops. Now we're going to be finding a new low price level. And so marketing around that, looking at forward-looking pricing, those kind of things, matters. I mean, people that saw prices declining and saw a way to lock in a price early during this crop season, they look really smart right now. I mean, if they were able to do that.
So what you're saying is really these payments from the government will probably continue to constitute a relatively small share of farm income.
Average-ish.
Average over time. in a low price year, they might be all of farm income, but over time,
yeah. Well, what I was going to say is, you look at our top size producers, right? In terms of acreage and revenue, we're looking at maybe if you tap them out, the highest level of government payment you can get, like 3% of revenue could be coming from the government. That's not much. It can get to 5 and 6 if things go terrible, right? And there's no market side revenue, but it's a small thing compared to.
So in the year when net farm income is defined by government payments, farmers are going to be getting pretty low incomes.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right.
All right. So farmers now, they want to find more information on this new bill, but yet the experts aren't even sure what's quite happening with the bill. So what's the best way for farmers to stay informed?
Well, we're definitely ratcheting up effort here. Center for Commercial Agriculture, we're trying to produce some documentation, some fact sheets, sort of quick hits, just to remind people, you know, it's easy to look at a calculation and an example, but what's really at work inside of that calculation? What are the levers here that are causing one of these things to move and the other one not to, that kind of thing. And so, you know, we're on hopefully a better publication schedule there. There's going to be tools, so USDA Farm Service Agency, that's where everybody will go to sign up for their program. We'll have some worksheets, and they also have a government-funded tool that Illinois took the lead on. So we'll be working with that as well, and hopefully we'll be able to do some interesting sort of walkthroughs for people, put those online and show them which button do you click next, those kind of things. And what to avoid, what to make it.
Local county extension educators, they've been informed about this.
We are working with our county educators. We did a webinar with them last week. We'll continue to push material to them and hopefully get feedback back from them that lets us know how we can shape that and give a better education experience.
That's great. Roman, Ken and I really appreciate you being here and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks, Roman.